Do you think that New York state laws protecting a woman's right to choose an abortion are safe? You do, huh? Then why is the New York State Assembly preparing to vote on parental consent and notification restrictions, Medicaid restrictions, and a mandatory 24-hour waiting period for all women seeking a safe and legal abortion? Join the National Abortion Rights Action League for their Albany Lobby Day on Tuesday, April 27th. NARAL will provide training, bus transportation, and briefings. For information and reservations, call 212-724-5770. That's 212-724-5770. And keep abortion safe and accessible in New York State.
This has been a public service announcement of WAI on behalf of the National Abortion Rights Action League.
And in case you couldn't make it out, he was trying to say WBAI New York. It's 10 o'clock on a Wednesday night, and we're going to go from night to day. That's right, from the Software Prevention Association to Freedom of Information. Stay with us. We'll explain just what we mean here on Off the Hook. You know, it's been said that when you take away access to information, then only the privileged and elite will have the information in the first place. And that's something to bear in mind when you have people coming after you saying, you've got to pay $500 to use this program. And, you know, that's not even enough. That's not even enough, you know. I don't know how many of you are listening to the program before this fascinating discussion with someone from the Software Publishers Association, which I call the Software Prevention Association, because if we all play by those rules, there'll be no software, because nobody will be able to afford it. I mean, we do a lot of programming geared for individual people, not corporations, regular people, you know, like you, the people that support this radio station. And if all of you were expected to go out and pay a couple of $1,000s just to run word processors and modem programs and operating systems and all that kind of business, not just once. No, that's not good enough. Not just once, but for every time you copy it onto another machine. If you have, say, a PC and a 286 and a 386 or something like that in your house. Some people have two computers, or if you have a computer at work and a computer at home, you gotta pay every time. If you work in an office that has, say, four or five computers, you got to pay every time. So the reasonable $500 price for a particular bit of software winds up costing you $2,500. Now, some of us in the corporate world might be able to afford that kind of talk, but those of us here on planet Earth, it's a bit more difficult. Now, I don't know of any college students within the sound of my voice that is real struggling college students, which is kind of what the tradition of the word is. I don't know any of them that can afford to pay even $100 for something like that. Now, of course, you can't give the stuff away for free, but to charge full corporate rates for everybody, it's self-defeating. It's bad for all of us. Not just bad for the individuals, it's bad in the end for the people making the software as well. And by the way, I should point out that we've already filed the paperwork here at BAI. Actually, a couple of us over at 2600 The Hacker Quarterly suspect that some folks over at SPA might be reading some unauthorized copies of 2600. So we're sending a team over there. We're demanding that they allow us in. And for every sentence we find that was taken from 2600, for every word that may have been used in our magazine at some point, we're going to require them to pay a penalty and buy another subscription. All's fair. Well, I'd like to know people's opinions on that, though, from a more individualistic point of view, because there's two worlds. There's the corporate world, there's the individual world. And if you don't believe me, take a look at things like $2,000 toilet seats that the CIA gets suckered in for, or whoever it was that wound up doing that. Individuals tend to ask questions a lot more. And big, faceless corporations tend to sign the checks. Something to think about. And speaking of unauthorized words, we've got an unauthorized word or two to read to you that was leaked to us from a newsletter. Actually, the newsletter didn't leak it to us. I'm sure the newsletter would be very upset if they knew we had this. But somebody gave this to us. We can't identify who they are. Newsletter is called I4. I for an I? I don't really know what it means. Oh, here's what it means. Thank you. International Information Integrity Institute. Four I's. I4, get it? International Information Integrity Institute. Doesn't that sound self-righteous? Well, the article, small article here, is entitled More Trouble from 2600. Now, we figure since they're writing about hackers, and a lot of you out there are hackers, and people who are interested in hackers, might do us all some good to hear what they say. But don't copy these words or use them irresponsibly. The article is written by Don Parker, Don B. Parker. The spring 1992 issue of 2600, The Hacker Quarterly, gives more bad news for the computing world and especially for information security staffs. This issue will probably unleash a new batch of viruses, mostly in the United States. Europe can still worry about the new viruses emanating from Sofia and Moscow, the subjects of a session at the Helsinki Forum 16. At least three articles should be of concern to you. How to create an MS-DOS star.com virus. with complete annotated coding instructions. MS-DOS batch viruses, also with detailed coding. And how to beat virus scanner products, particularly products from McAfee Associates. Other articles of interest include how to hack WWIV, a popular hacker bulletin board operating system with detailed code. An alternative approach to Unix password hacking, spelling bad news for unprotected Unix users. A description of how to dismantle pay telephones, bad news for telcos. A review of Steve Jackson's new hacker card game that is sure to stimulate a new wave of juvenile hackers. A list of about 200 schools using simplex push-button door locks. The autumn 1991 issue explained how to beat these locks. And a personal ad from a former U.S. Army electronic warfare technician with a top secret clearance looking for surveillance work which requires cunning, ingenuity, and skill. 2600 continues to skirt the criminal laws in New York State and hides irresponsibly within the First Amendment rights of free speech. Publisher Emmanuel Goldstein has been emboldened by the attention and support he has received at the recent antivirus and computers freedom and privacy conferences in New York and Washington, D.C. He fails to understand in his irrational hacker thinking that our civil rights come with responsibility to treat them with respect and use them for good purposes. We suggest that those using McAfee services check with their suppliers about updated products to deal with the new threats. Simplex push-button door locks are often found in industrial research labs. Security departments should replace them. Remember, the hacker wars are not over yet. Information obtained in recent SRI interviews with communications industry security people indicated in one case that, by explicit count, at least 12,000 dangerous hackers are out there who probably are exchanging even more sinister information than found in 2600. To avoid any residual messages that might be compromised, the newest pirate bulletin boards are now using a chat mode of messaging communication restricted to only real-time exchanges. And that's the threat from us here, hiding irresponsibly behind the First Amendment. Come join us. It's getting lonely back here. Too bad they can't make CDs queue up cleanly. But I guess that's one of the challenges of the 90s. Let's see what's going on in the world. The real world. The world of fun. The Tagesspiegel, which is a Berlin daily, carried an article on Monday describing the problems encountered switching from Middle European time to Middle European summer time on Sunday. That's what they call it over there. It seems that the Bavarian police computer system was caught unawares and responded by closing down. INPOL, I-N-P-O-L, which stores all information about persons the police are looking for, as well as having connections to the car and stolen car registries and other databases, well, it just stopped. From 3 a.m. on, no checks could be made at the borders. No checks could be made for stopped cars, except for alcohol tests. A dragnet action scheduled for 4 a.m. was conducted, despite the data loss, but only resulted in 16 arrests for driving under the influence. The cause of the error was still being feverishly searched for as the paper went to press. Last week we told you about the majority leader of the Minnesota legislature having to resign because his son got a hold of his calling card and started sharing it with his friends, and before he knew it, well, the situation was a bit out of control. $85,000 phone bill. Well, the fraud occurred because the majority leader's son revealed his father's access code to the state phone system to a few of his friends, who then told two friends, and so on and so on and so on. The system was set up to allow users to dial in on an 800 number, enter the code, and then dial any number. And once the fraud was publicly revealed, the scandal has grown. The leadership of the DFL, which is the Minnesota Democratic Party, has been working overtime on damage control. Already there are articles in the local press, normally supporters of the DFL, suggesting that they've become too arrogant in their power. Since the discovery of the fraud, the following has occurred. As we said, the majority leader was forced to resign from his post. There's been an effort by the Democrats to shift the blame to MCI, the legislature's long-distance provider. The Republicans, sensing a political opportunity, are battling efforts to shift the blame. And the House suspended its rules to approve an amendment to Minnesota's Open Meeting Act, which restricts what types of public business can be conducted in private. The amendment adds the legislature to the list of public bodies which are affected by the law, which is a step that many have felt desirable for years. And in addition to the investigation that's going on by the county attorney, State Attorney General Hubert Humphrey III has opened a criminal investigation into the matter. And let's see what else we have here. A mangled zip code can lead to a nightmare. Bet you didn't know that. Ken Hoym writes to the Risks Digest. I am a member of the Columbia House CD Club. The way such clubs work is you get a bunch of nearly free CDs at the beginning of your membership. It's maybe a penny or 99 cents or something like that. And they raise the price. And then there's an obligation to purchase a certain number within a specified time. They reserve the right to bill you for unpurchased CDs if you do not fulfill the obligation. Well, last summer, it's a nice summer, the U.S. Post Office gave us a new zip code. They do that occasionally. And I sent a change of address form in which the change from the zip code of 55369 to 55311 was noted. After this, well, their monthly mailings stopped. And last week I received a letter from a collection agency due to my unfulfilled agreement. The address was so incredibly mangled I was amazed the post office was able to route it. The zip code had only one digit right. It was 54762. The city and street names were mangled as well. Apparently, their data entry operator damaged the record when entering the change of address. My guess is that Columbia House attempted to send their bulk class mailings to this mangled address and never got them routed. Or never got a proper response to the address correction requested notation. I don't suppose the post office spends a lot of time trying to route misaddressed bulk mail. Rather than trying to send me anything by first-class mail, they turned it over to a collection agency to make this attempt. Seems pretty inefficient since the cost of the collection agency has to be more than the first-class letter. Finally, I called Columbia House's 800 number to clear this up. The operator corrected the address online, but made the comment that he had to make sure the change took. Apparently, they have experienced regular problems with entering an address change, only to have the system not actually make the change to the database record. They either have a software or a training problem there. The simple change of 2 zip code digits led to far more chaos than it should. And here's a note on teenage hackers. Also comes to us from the Risk Digest. Contributor Jim Haynes sent in this one. And he got it from the newsletter of the Purim Foundation, Miracles in Trust. July 1911. In Los Angeles, teenaged radio amateur operators trained at Los Angeles Polytechnic High School intercepted and disclosed collusion over the Catalina wireless circuit involving the Hearst newspapers, with much attendant publicity and a criminal prosecution later dismissed. The Wireless Association of Southern California, of over 200 young Los Angeles amateurs, formed as a result of the incident. Operated a 2-kilowatt spark transmitter using the call signs ALA. And finally, in what must be a great embarrassment to NSI officials, security at the InterNIC host for registration services was compromised on the second day of official services to the Internet community. Through a series of accidents, a user of their FTP service was able to access directories normally off-limits to anonymous FTP services. As a result of this access, the user was able to obtain a copy of the system's etc/password file that could be used to decode passwords of users on the system through the use of a password cracking program. The user was also able to access system logs, including a log of anonymous FTP transactions by users around the world. In the course of this investigation, the user was able to find numerous other security holes, including world-mountable file systems. Although no further action was taken, these holes would enable a malicious hacker to easily penetrate the system. Or a malicious anyone, really. An InterNIC admin was in the process of fixing the security holes at the time of this release. The InterNIC Registration Services is funded by NSF to administer registration of network numbers, domain names, autonomous system numbers, and other functions crucial to the operation of the global Internet. Date of this is April 2nd, and the contributor notes that this is not an April Fool's joke. Those of you who want to subscribe to the Risk Digest can do so completely free of charge. Simply by actually use the program RN or NN or one of the news programs on the Internet. You have to be on the Internet. That's the only condition. Or something that is connected to the Internet somehow. And the newsletter is called comp.risks. And the Internet is something else that has to be made available to people for low cost. It's very, very important. You can put a price that's completely unaffordable and say that it reflects the cost and all the expenses entailed in running a computer, building a computer, developing a computer, and all the software, et cetera, et cetera. And nobody will be able to use the system. Or you can have a system like the Internet, which is usable by students in college and some students in high school even, and also a small number of commercial users, smaller number of commercial users, that is, ever-growing in all fields. Now, if we're able to expand that, make it more accessible to more people at lower costs or no cost at all of a sudden you'll have a lot of educated people. And I know that's the scary thing to a lot of us out there. All right, we're going to be taking phone calls on the issue of access, and also a rather exciting thing is happening in many parts of our area in the next week or so. Caller ID is coming, or as New York Telephone has renamed it, Call ID. I don't know why they do that, but they have to name it something different in every area. And if you have any questions on that, how it's going to affect you, not everybody's going to get it, too, by the way. Some of you may think you're going to get it, but you're not. That's just the way it is. Some of us are elite and some of us are not. That's the way it goes. But everybody will have it eventually, or everybody will have the capability, and we will all be affected by it one way or another, and that's what we have to address. I recommend, I've always recommend this, that everybody who is capable of doing it, and those of you in New Jersey, You're not capable of doing it because you didn't make enough of a fuss about it. Now look where you are. Don't go the way of New Jersey, New York. New York can block their phone numbers from being sent every time they make a phone call. New York can remain anonymous the way it's been the whole time. New York can keep things the way they are. Or, if they choose, they can change. But New Jersey never had the choice. They had to change. And they can't prevent it. So that's why I recommend to everybody that has the ability to keep all call block on your phone, and when you choose to send your phone number, you can send your phone number. It's as simple as that. And we'll tell you how. We'll tell you all the information you need to know about caller ID. Our phone number is 212-279-3400. And if you get a busy signal, don't be disheartened, because we hang up on people pretty quickly sometimes and lines open up. So just keep trying. And if you're lucky enough to have keep calling when the phone is busy feature, well, use that. No, don't use that, because that costs money. They charge you 25 cents or 75 cents every time you do that. I don't know how they get away with things like this. This is something else that I don't know how they get away with. That's the touchtone debate. This is an article that appeared in December 14th, 1992 issue of Communications Week. And what's particularly interesting about it is that it was not written by me. Yes, somebody else is upset about touchtones. Not upset by touchtones. Touchtones are great. We all love touchtones. But the fact is, how do they get away with charging you to use them? I mean, they come from your telephone. Yet they try to convince you that there's an extra service when there is none. This article is entitled "The Great Touchtone Service Ripoff Continues," written by Edwin E. Meir. It's a marketer's dream come true to sell a product that millions must buy and that every customer must continue to pay for every month for the rest of their lives. No, it's not some new super addictive form of crack cocaine. It's touchtone phone service. Remember murdery telephones, like those heavy, metal, black, nuclear-proof Western Electric phones that you see in the old movies? Those phones used pulse dialing. Well, here we are 20 years later, and we're still paying a few bucks every month for touchtone. Today, you'd be hard-pressed to find a phone, or a modem for that matter, that uses only pulse dialing, but that doesn't matter. About 20 years ago, dual-tone multi-frequency DTMF dialing, better known by AT&T's trademarked name touchtone, came to the local phone network. The local phone companies rushed out to add DTMF processors to their switches. Then they had to recoup this major investment, of course. So they sold their state public utility commissions on letting them charge just a few bucks a month to every customer, residential and business alike, that had access to touchtone dialing. It's true that the telephone companies have incredibly long depreciation schedules for new equipment investments, but this is ridiculous. They can't still be paying off the decades-old equipment that added DTMF support. Do you have to get touchtone? No. But just try to get out of paying for it. I asked my phone company what would happen if I dropped touchtone. What I got were dire predictions of equipment incompatibility and service disruptions, and veiled threats about what would happen if they caught me using DTMF equipment on my line without paying the touchtone surcharge. You'd be in big trouble, they said. Big trouble. 3 years ago, a friend of mine in New York decided to risk it. He canceled his touchtone service and continued using his DTMF phone. After a while, he started getting threatening calls from the phone company. They warned him they'd make it so he couldn't use DTMF and he'd have to try to find a pulse dial phone. He dared them to do it. A month ago, they did. But still, rather than pay for touchtone, he scrounged around and finally found a pulse dial phone at an estate sale. A telephone company engineer I know confided to me that the phone company has quite a bit of engineering to do to cut off someone's touchtone. They probably spent thousands of dollars in person hours to find, track, and then turn off only touchtone to just one customer, he explained. But making an example of a troublemaker and preserving this lucrative, unearned windfall is probably worth it to the telephone companies. Figure a buck and a half per month per phone line and 100 million phones, that's about $2 billion a year. What a scam. I wonder if ISDN basic rate interface customers are also still being made to pay for touchtone service. And that article was written by Edwin E. Meir, president of Meir Communications, at Princeton Junction, New Jersey-based network consultancy. And you can reach him on MCI Mail, M-I-E-R, at TIGGER.JVNC.net. on the internet. Very nice article, except one thing I got to take exception to. It's not very hard for them to turn off touchtones. In fact, in the current issue of 2600, we print the two lines that are necessary to type to turn off touchtone. Actually, to turn on touchtone. Turning off is not very hard either. Fiber optics in the studio, and you know something about turning off touchtones, do you not?
Yeah, and I don't know what genius phone company employee talked to this nice gentleman, but a phone company engineer, I'd be really surprised.
Well, you know, it's nice to think of them going to a lot of trouble to track somebody down, but it didn't. I mean, computers do this. Computers can find out if somebody is. You know, they can find out what numbers you're pressing. They can find out what numbers you're calling and what time you do it. They can tell you everybody that called Guam at 11 o'clock last Tuesday. I mean, that's what computers are for. So they can easily find out who's using a touchtone phone before.
Touchtone service can be enabled and disabled in the blink of an eye as easily as you and I can breathe. It's not something that requires any intelligence or any sort of special planning. It's simply done by entering a few simple commands into a computer, a telephone switching system.
What's particularly ironic is, in my case, I had touchtone service all my life. I lived in pretty much the same neighborhood all my life, and never paid for it. Well, as a kid, of course, I never paid for it, but even when I actually got to the point of paying bills, I never paid for it because it was a crossbar switch, and they had no way of differentiating the lines on a crossbar switch, so everybody simply got it. And if you paid for it, great, you paid for it. If you didn't pay for it, well, you should pay for this, you know? But they never actually said anything. But last summer when they cut us over to a 5ESS... Well, they figured out a way to actually isolate the lines and find those people that weren't paying that fee and selectively tell the dial tone to ignore it. But we've been over this 100 times. It's something that refuses to go away. It's gone away in some places. California, I believe, doesn't charge anymore. I think Washington, Wisconsin, growing number of states don't charge. So that's a positive sign. Call your public service commission in New York and Albany. If they're listening, please do something about this. This is not fair. All right, before we get to the phones, one letter which we got to the radio station to Off the Hook. Gentlemen, I have never been able to reach you during your program, and I guess a lot of people out there have never been able to reach us, and we are sorry about that. There's not a damn thing we can do about it. I have an old-fashioned rotary dial telephone. I have been receiving mystery calls for the last several years. I receive more of these calls than real personal calls. When I pick up the phone, there is no answer but a beep. If I hold on for a while, there are sometimes 3 beeps. Or sometimes there is just a dial tone. The mystery caller. If he reaches my answering machine, sometimes I don't pick up the phone when home, makes a horrible noise for a few moments, which does not register on my answering machine. Which, I guess, leads to the good question as to how they would know that if it doesn't register and they're not home, but we'll skip over that part. Should I suspect a Martian or the CIA? Could it be a hacker or prankster? Is someone trying to fax me? Well, briefly, I don't know whether to laugh or cry about this. I would really appreciate an answer. And we're going to try to answer that question for you on the radio. We don't know. It could be anything. It could be a fax machine, because faxes do beep sometimes, and they do try repeatedly. It sounds to me like it's a machine of some sort, because machines are pretty relentless. But you don't have to take this. You don't have to take this at all. Recently, I had an experience with a voicemail system that was calling one of our numbers repeatedly, every 15 minutes, for weeks. And there's a service that's available. It's a service that doesn't cost money and never will cost money as long as we have something to say about it. It's called the Annoyance Call Bureau. And in New York, well, you wrote from... Yeah, New York, that's good, okay. New York, it's 890-6200. It doesn't cost anything to call that number. And they're open until 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And you simply open up a case with them if you're getting harassed. If it's a machine that's harassing you, you tell it. You tell them what time the machine called you. If it's calling your answering machine has to be able to tell them what time it called. And inside of a week, they can usually figure out where those calls are coming from. In our particular case, we had... Apparently, what happened was a hacker had gotten into some company's voicemail system and thought it would be real cute to have that voicemail system call our voicemail system and every 15 minutes keep updating us that we have a message waiting on some system where we don't even know where it is. And, you know, that was all funny and cute and all that. But after a while, we grew annoyed. And not so much annoyed at the person that did this as a prank, because, you know, a prank is a prank. But it was annoying that this machine would call us and not tell us where it was coming from. You know, it would call and say, "You have a message. Go get your message." And, of course, we couldn't get the message because we didn't have the password. You know, we'd say, "Okay, let's hear the message." And they'd say, "Well, what's the password?" "You don't know the password? Well, you're not authorized." "But you called me. You called me in my house, and you're telling me I'm not authorized." And then you hang up, and the thing calls you back 15 minutes later. Every day. Every 15 minutes. That is harassment, my friends. And I hold the company operating the voicemail system responsible for that. They have to be able to control their system. They have to be able to identify themselves. They have to be able to provide you. Imagine if I had a rotary phone. I had no way of even pressing a button. Imagine if I didn't have an answering machine and I was being woken up at 4 a.m. by this machine somewhere telling me I have a message. Can't allow that to happen, and there's no reason why you should. So that's what the Annoyance Call Bureau is for. I have to say they were able to track it down and stop it. I don't know what they had to do to stop it. Maybe the phone, that particular company somewhere in the country pulled out all of its lines and went out of business or something. I don't really care. You can't go harassing good, decent people. And that's what it all boils down to. So if you're being harassed, call the Annoyance Call Bureau, and they're there to help. I know that sounds like an advertisement for them, but no, I'm telling you, they're there to help, and they better help, and if they don't help, let us know, and let the Public Service Commission know, and let other people know as well. All right, it's just about time for us to go to the telephones. In fact, it is time for us to go to the telephones, so without any further ado, let's go to the phones. Good evening, you're on Off the Hook.
Hi, good evening. I'd like to make a comment.
Oh, that's what we're here. That's what you're here for. Go ahead.
Well, the thing that you said about software, and I think I feel the same way about it, because I know when I was in high school, if I never, you know, had the chance to use somebody else's software, I would have never become a software consumer. I wouldn't have been worth anything to these software companies who are trying to sell anything, because I would have been too intimidated to buy anything that expensive.
Of course, and if you don't know,
and then the thing is, I would have never developed into a customer, and that's what they want. Mm-hmm. Isn't that true?
Yeah, and if you don't know anything about computers to start with, how can they expect somebody to go out and pay this huge amount of money for something they don't even know if that's what they want? You know, you need to be able to play with something for a while, and then you become part of the whole process. Now, you know, I saw an advertisement for DOS 6 for about, $40 or $50? That's a reasonable price, I think, for an operating system. And I might actually go out and get that if that's what I want. But you got to keep things within the reach of people. And if you start making it so that regular people cannot afford them, and even small businesses cannot afford them, then you cannot be surprised when people start acquiring them, because people are going to take technology anyway. They're not going to be told they're not allowed to use this, they're not allowed to run this program. That's nonsense.
Yeah, and another thing I want to make a comment on is to the caller who talks about Chemical Bank all the time. And if he keeps doing that, then, you know, I won't be able to make free phone calls either, because the word will be out.
That's right. That's right. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
All right. Not that we advocate making free phone calls from Chemical Bank, but really, Chemical Bank, what's your problem? I mean, this has only been mentioned on this radio program now for about the last year. It's about time that maybe you turn that service off. There's all kinds of other evil things that can be done from Chemical Bank, but we won't get into that right now. Let's go to the phones. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, good afternoon, Neil.
Whatever.
Last week, some person called in about they want information how to seal their identity. I have some information that I get from a book, so I have some the address, really. Want me to give it over to you?
Why don't you give the address, yes.
Okay, it's from our CRB Research Books Incorporated. They're located at P.O. Box 56, Comac, COMMACK, New York. And the zip code is 11725. This book, I don't have it in front of me, but I have an ad for it, and they say they have a lot of information about how to see your identity and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
So it got $18.95, and probably posters and handles.
Well, you can probably
also included.
You probably write to them and ask for a catalog, I would imagine.
And, you can ask for a catalog also, yeah, and they send a catalog also. These people, I had dealt with them a couple of years now, so they are pretty good.
Okay, well, thanks for passing that on to us.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay. 212-279-3400. Good evening, you're on Off the Hook.
Hi. On the previous show, one of the things that struck me as particularly weird was that they were made a statement that most of these corporations buy X number of copies of the software to fit their machines, and then they only use one copy of it, and the rest of it stay in a closet somewhere in shrink wrap.
Right.
And the amount of resources that are wasted that way. I mean, why can't they prearrange it and just sell the manuals or something like that? I mean, the idea that the non-renewable resources that this software production uses up is just being used for it to be put in storage, like they used to pay people to grow grain to put in silos.
Uh-huh. It's the same logic, I guess. But yeah, it's a good point. The manuals
horrifying,
are something
especially
you don't get that
since
support.
The previous show makes such an odd, ironic pitch for the homeless at the end, and still subscribes to this conspicuous consumption. I'm nauseated by it.
Well, you know, I'm not sure if they actually subscribe to that notion. It seemed to me they were battering the guy from SBA pretty well.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah, but the thing is, it goes against what individuals feel. I think to expect you to pay this horrendous charge for something, and then, you know, if you copy it, let's say you have a kid and he has a computer too. You're trying to tell me that they have the right to come into your house and charge you with a crime if you copy a program and give it to your kid to use on their computer? No, you have to buy it again. And, you know, it's like, imagine if this happened with books, you know. Libraries would go out of business, for one thing. But every time you gave a book to somebody, you'd have to pay a fee. It's unhealthy, and it's not natural.
Well, keep up your good work, and I will be encouraged by that.
Okay. Well, thanks for calling. All right. 212-279-3400. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Am I on the radio?
Yes.
Okay. I would like to make a comment about the caller ID and the internet.
Well, go ahead.
Yes. I just got on the internet a few months ago, and I noticed a few anonymous services on the internet, I won't name any now.
Oh, there's one coming out of Finland. There's a couple others in the works.
I just found out that most of them are being killed off by agencies such as the FBI and security agencies.
Well, I don't know if that's necessarily true. I haven't heard of the FBI killing off something anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they'd like to, I'm sure, but I don't think they actually have.
It's a general trend that's continuing that you're not supposed to remain anonymous on the internet.
Uh-huh.
Basically. And that's a bit scary because you can't, if you want to make a comment or something, you don't want to be, you know, threatened or things like that.
Well, now, there's a risk in being anonymous, obviously. You can say something that might not be true, and there's nobody that will back it up. You can start rumors, you can just spread complete lies, or you can also leak information that otherwise would not be leaked. It's a two-edged sword, so you have to, have a degree of responsibility. Now, there's a lot of people that say, well, if you've got nothing to hide, then you've got nothing to worry about. But that just doesn't hold. It doesn't hold in the caller ID argument. It doesn't hold in the, day-to-day life argument. We all have privacy we want to maintain, and we don't always want to advertise our presence when we say something or when we call somebody. And for that reason alone, I think it's important that there be a way of saying something anonymously.
Mm-hmm. And I will also like to make a comment about piracy. I'm in New York, and there are million boards with pirate boards in New York, and the activity on them is amazing. And I don't know how the SBA thinks it's doing, but I don't think it's doing anything, really.
Uh-huh. Are you saying the SBA should shut down these boards?
Well, mostly these boards are being used by kids.
Okay.
They're just downloading games, so I think that they should be left alone. But
well, shouldn't these kids have to pay $500 too for whatever program it is they're downloading?
Well, mostly it's games, and it's they can't really afford it to buy X amount of games.
Well, then, in the words of the person from the SBA who was here before, or to paraphrase them, then they shouldn't have access. They shouldn't be using it at all. They should be doing something else.
Oh, they should be going after the people overseas, the major pirates.
Look, I think it's a good sign when people take an interest in something, and a lot of people are taking an interest in software and hardware and computers and technology, and that's something we should be encouraging, not discouraging. All right, thanks for your call.
Okay, thank you.
Let's see who else is out there. Good evening.
Yeah, hi. I have a question and a statement, but first I wanted to address the guy who made a couple of phone calls.
Okay, that's three things.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I'm the person who called the last show, actually, about installing the 50 copies of software but only opening one. And I just wanted to let that guy know that we actually have called some of these companies and told them, you know, this is what we're doing. Can we just buy a site license for 40 or 50 machines? But a lot of these companies won't sell site licenses for that small an amount. They'll only sell for like 500 and up.
Uh-huh.
Companies like Lotus. So we realize that it's stupid to be buying all these, you know, things that are never going to be open. But unfortunately, that's the only way we can do it and stay legal with these companies, too.
Yeah.
My question is, I've been looking all over the city for 2600, and I can't find it at newsstands. Can I pick it up anywhere?
Actually, it's all over the place. You can find it in Tower Books. You can find it, I believe, at St. Mark's Books. And what's that one on Broadway? Hudson News.
Oh, really?
Shakespeare Books. It's just ask around. I'm sure you'll find it.
Okay, I've been looking. Okay.
Yeah.
And my statement is the geese fly low.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, thanks for that statement. That was much needed. You know, I saw swans flying today. I just want to point that out. That's the first time in my life I think I've ever seen swans flying. And they flew high, but it was a miraculous sight. And you could tell they were swans because their heads were about a half mile in front of the rest of their bodies. Good evening.
Yes, good evening. It's short tape delay.
Yeah, could you speak up a little bit?
Yeah, hi.
Actually, it's digital delay, not tape delay.
Digital delay. That's
yeah.
Expensive. Quick question. Well, first of all, I'll compliment you on the existence of your show, which is really fantastic. Curious if, regarding cable television, conventional coaxial cable TV, do you have any conception as to how a cable company could know whether you have one or two or more installations within your house?
Well, no, I don't really know how they would know that. Maybe it has something to do with a signal that gets sent back or something like that. I mean, they can tell sometimes if somebody is using an illegal box because it's a two-way signal in many cases. They send a signal out and they wait for some sort of an acknowledgement, or you're supposed to send a signal at a certain time, and if that signal doesn't show up.
A basic system, is it really that sophisticated?
A basic system shouldn't be that sophisticated, no. I mean, I have used cable TV in the past, and I've hooked up different TVs, and nobody has ever said anything, and I don't think they knew that this was being done. But that was a number of years ago. I haven't really been active in the technology, so I'm not sure what they're capable of knowing. But the overall consensus out there seems to be that they're capable of knowing everything, which is always a scary conclusion to reach.
They're using a scare tactic to get people to pay up or what? The other thing is, what is the meaning of 2600?
What are the meetings?
No, what is the meaning?
Oh, meaning.
2600.
Well, 2600 hertz is a frequency. I'll let Fiber Optic explain that one.
2600 hertz is a frequency used on trunk lines connecting switching equipment between central offices, and these trunk lines carry signaling information as well as speech information between offices. And it's getting to be outdated, and it's not used anymore in the long-distance network.
But what's the significance of using it for a hacker magazine?
Oh, I see. Well, traditionally it was used in the 60s and 70s by hackers, well, actually more appropriately by phone freaks, to explore the telephone network by mimicking the signaling information that was sent over trunk lines by signaling these audible frequencies, these tones.
So 2600 is kind of like a cry for freedom, I guess. Free telephone calls or whatever. Back in the 60s.
Keep up the good work, and hope you stay around.
Okay, well, thanks for calling.
Take care.
And this is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here, Fiber Optic in the studio as well. We have about 10 minutes left. And we're taking your phone calls at 212-279-3400. Good evening.
Hi. Do you know that you guys are talking about software stuff here? I'm going to buy DOS 6 because it is only $50 for one reason. And there's another alternative to that. It's called shareware. Okay, there's a lot of good stuff out there on shareware, for one.
Right.
Registration is pretty reasonable.
I get the impression that SPA and the commercial clearinghouses don't really like shareware all that much. In fact,
they mention that.
Lots of times they will tell you that if you use shareware, you might get a virus.
Yeah, well, that's not true because I'm a co-systems operator on a board, and we check all our software. I just want everyone to know that.
Uh-huh.
It's a fallacy that you pick up viruses from BBSs. Okay, we check at least our BBS and the network that we're on in the Hudson Valley here. We check every piece of software that comes in for viruses with the latest virus scanners, and we get some from people that you can't get, and we let people know. We let the other systems operators along the network know who's out there, you know, who's circulating viruses, if any are there. And we tell our users that they're going to be thrown off the board if they give us a virus.
Right. And more than a couple of times, commercial software has contained viruses, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's where you get the viruses from. You know, any case I've seen of viruses has always come from somebody downloading a demo or some piece of commercial software. It's not happened much from shareware or stuff that you pick up on bulletin boards. That's ridiculous.
Uh-huh. And how can people get a hold of your board?
They can dial area code 914-297-2915, 9600 board or better.
Okay. Yes. Well, thanks for calling.
Okay, have a good night.
All right. Yeah, shareware is certainly something that the commercial software houses don't really appreciate all that much, and it's something that you can find a lot of good stuff out there. You really can. You have to look a little bit, and you have to make a few phone calls, but it's worth it. Good evening. Hello?
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, I'm calling for the...
Well, you're on. You're on the air.
Okay, let me turn the radio down there.
Yeah, good idea.
Okay, two questions. I have internet access through my school.
Okay.
And I wanted to know, I can use the telnet. I can use the telnet command, but I don't know, like, what node to telnet out to, or...
Well, what do you want to telnet to?
Like, well, see, I'm not really that acquainted with the internet, so, like, if I can get onto something like the well.
Okay, well, using telnet is like, you know, getting on an airplane. You have to know where you're going, and you want to go to the well.
Yeah.
So what you do is you type telnet, you get the telnet prompt,
mm-hmm.
and then you type open space, and for the well, you would type well.sf.ca.us.
Sf.ca?
.us. As in San Francisco, California, United States. And once you hit return, the next thing you should see is connected to the well, et cetera, et cetera, and it'll ask you to log in, and it'll give you the instructions on how to log in for a new user and all that kind of thing. And that's the same basic system for any system in the world. You just have to know the address. You have to know where you're going, and you type it that way. You can also type telnet followed by it on the same line, but there's a reason why people don't do that. Fiber, would you like to get into that?
Yeah, just a minor note is that when you type telnet with the address immediately following it, if you care at all about other people seeing where it is you're telnetting to, the easiest thing all they have to do is just see what your process status of the processes you're running, and right there it'll say telnet in the system you're connected to. It's not really a big thing, but if you care about privacy and don't want people bothering you about where you're connecting to, just run telnet by itself, and then within telnet, open a connection.
Okay.
Then it'll simply say that you're using telnet.
And one other question. I know that that cordless phones use what is called like a rotating security frequency, security code or something like that. Like every time you make a call, the security code changes.
The newer ones do, yes.
So I was wondering if, with regard to cellular phones, if they're going to start using that with the ESN and the MIN.
Well, you know, I think that would solve a lot of problems if they did. I haven't. Have you heard anything about that?
No, I haven't.
I haven't heard that they're going to. I think, you know, they seem to be comfortable saying that it's illegal to listen to cellular phone calls, and that's the only privacy that people are going to get. But just if you use a cellular phone, remember there's people out there listening, and they can hear you, and it might be illegal to listen. But come on, let's get real here, you know. So
okay.
until that happens, use phones that offer security, and unfortunately, cellular phones are
well,
not.
Well, actually, I'm on the other side of that spectrum.
You're on the other
I'm,
side?
I'm the one with the scanner.
Oh, well, okay. Well, just make sure you avoid those illegal frequencies.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, you got to be careful what you listen to these days. 99.5 is a legal frequency, though. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, good evening, Emmanuel.
How you doing?
Interesting program, as always.
Thank you.
And to your guests and so forth. I am having a lot of trouble with freedom of speech, you know. Not that I should be on as much as I am. I would love it if other people called in critically. And that's the thing about freedom of speech.
You're on an awful lot, though, aren't you?
I mean, virtually every program.
Budget,
your time, you know, if you had a half hour more, I wouldn't be angry.
Well, let me just ask one question. You know, is there any radio program you have not been on this station?
This is an example
of why we need a new telephone system, because two people talk at the same time, and while I hear him, he doesn't hear me. And that's a big problem. It's called... It's a problem with communication. So if anybody out there knows how to build a phone system where we can both hear each other at the same time, please help us out. Let's go to another call. Good evening.
Yes, Emmanuel.
Yes, go ahead.
Milo Phone Bill.
Hey, Milo Phone Bill. You're an old freaker from the past.
Yeah, second time I got through.
That's right. You called us once before.
Yeah, listen, where'd you get your blue box plans?
Blue box plans? Which means the ones on the 2600 shirts?
Maybe.
Well, I don't know. I can't really reveal that on the air, but if you come to our 2600 meeting, I'm sure we can have a conversation about it.
Okay. Are you going to be at Trenton?
I don't think so.
No, Fiber's going to be there.
I am? Fiber doesn't know that.
He doesn't know that. Well, it's iffy at best for me, I can tell you that.
Okay, well, Fiber's supposed to be there going head-to-head with some cop or something.
Don't tell me. Don Delaney again?
Could be.
Yeah, I've seen those pamphlets printed up. They print up the pamphlets before they ask anybody if they want to go.
Yeah, of course, you don't get them, like, until, what, a week before?
Something like that, sometimes after.
Yeah, what I want to know is, has anybody figured out how to speed up these 33-number dialers?
Which dialers are you talking about?
The Rat Shack ones.
Speed them up? In what way?
Yeah, like, you know, normally you use I use a Hayes modem to do my speed dialing.
Uh-huh.
Looking for, like, S11 equals 50.
Ah, okay, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, I know what he's saying, too, and I know why he's saying it, but... what it all boils down to, really, is... Well, the answer to your question is really no, because the timing is internal to the circuitry of the chip they're using, which is just a repertory tone dialer.
Yeah, I see it's potted.
What's that?
I see the chip is potted.
Yeah, it's one of those little custom jobs, probably. But you can get repertory tone dialing chips relatively cheaply. But the timing for the dialing from memory is hardwired into the chip. But as I tell everyone, it's a lot easier. If you want to do something right, simply build it yourself.
Yeah. Well, when you get old, you become an appliance operator.
Yeah.
It's been known to happen. Listen, we're out of time, but thanks for calling.
Okay. See you later.
Okay. And we'll be back again next week with yet another fun-filled hour. The program has been Off the Hook. We'll be again next week. And the program coming up next will be a repeat of the evening's news. So until next week, keep your eyes on technology. Write us a letter or question if you see something that's interesting. Our address is Off the Hook, care of WBAI, 505 8th Avenue, New York, New York, 10018. Until next time, Emmanuel Goldstein, take care.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. It couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. Oh, Billy Bomb for the best, expect the worst. I hope that's understood, but Billy Bomb.
Take a step into the 21st century and enter the world of communication technology when Basement Recordings present the Rhythm, Business and Technology Exhibition on Saturday, April 24th at the Medgar Evers College Gymnasium, located at 1150 Carroll Street in Brooklyn. The program begins at noon and ends at 5 p.m. If you're interested in any area of computer technology, whether as musician, engineer, educator, producer, graphic designer, parent, or just someone who is curious, Whether you're a seasoned professional or a fledgling amateur, this exhibition is for you. Again, the exhibition is Saturday, April 24th, Medgar Evers College Gymnasium, located 1150 Carroll Street in Brooklyn. For more information, please call 718-485-7120. 485-7120.
It's one of the most controversial frontiers of human experience. Thousands of people swear by it, even more swear against it. Others refuse to even discuss it. Yet it's the most popular box office draw in Hollywood history. UFOs, extraterrestrials, sightings, visitations, abductions. In the last 50 years, this phenomenon has intensified. UFOs may or may not exist, but something doubtlessly is happening that is yet to be explained. Is the experience extraterrestrial, interdimensional, or mass psychosis? I'm Ted Bonnet. Join me Saturday evening, April 17th at 7 p.m. for a live program on the UFO phenomenon. We'll examine thousands of sightings reported in the northern New York metropolitan area for over a decade. We'll speak with people who have seen something, people who say they even have had closer encounters. We'll speak with Phil Imbrogno, a researcher of the Hudson Valley sightings. We'll also speak with Dr. David Jacobs, who has helped hundreds of people recall close encounters through hypnosis.